I am definitely the goodwill ambassador of the Harold Ramis.
Absolutely.
Film. Well, you know,
you are represented in more films than any other teacher for my cohort, at least.
That is true. That is true. And I have in the Violet cohort, I had personally recruited 3 students.
Huh.
Yeah.
People from Columbia?
From the training center.
Oh, okay.
So I'm the Pied Piper of the Harold Ramis Film School. You know what happens to them?
Yeah, leading them in slaughter?
Yes, very much so. How did I get? Well, that's going to be the whole episode right there. Well, first of all, I think I was like, I don't know what the word is, like programmed to be here. I you couldn't engineer somebody more to be here than me. This is a bigger question than maybe. Well, first, the biggest mistake I ever think in my life that I ever made, and I've made tons of big mistakes,
okay,
was I should have come to Second City right out of high school.
Okay. Where'd you go to high school?
Richards High in Oklahoma, Illinois.
You said that as if I was going to know. This is a fabled high school.
It's Dwayne Wade's high school. Go Bulldogs. So John McNaughton and I are the 2 Southsiders on the faculty of
Ritz. Okay.
And we both went to the University of Illinois.
Okay.
But he got kicked off because he punched a teacher in the face. And I graduated because I punched no teachers in the face.
Congratulations on that.
So I should have come to Second City right out of high school. I should have gone to I should have gone to DePaul or Loyola or UIC or something. Mm-hmm. Majored in something innocuous but creative, like journalism or advertising or something.
Marketing,
but I really should have immersed myself in Second City when I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't because I'm dumb.
sought an education like an idiot.
So then it took 30 years for this place to like snatch me up and put me in here. So eventually it happened, but it took like way, way longer than it should have.
Yeah.
Because I was doing stand-up in mm-hmm. college and out of college, and and what I was doing stand-up wise was like sketches, but I perform all the parts myself.
Okay, like a one-man show type
approach. Like a one-man show, like Saturday Night Live, but me.
Yeah,
doing all the parts. But I should have just come with other actors and done sketches instead of doing. So that was not smart. So it took like forever for me to get here. But once I got here, I told somebody once that. I think every second of my life prepared me to be here or trained me to be here.
Yeah.
And I mean literally every second. And she was like, well, what do you mean me talking to you right now? How is that preparing? Well, this is a human interaction and we're communicating and this is a thing to do it.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if this is true or probably, but I'm going to say, I don't know how many faculty members have seen Club Paradise,
mm-hmm.
but I think I'm the only faculty member that saw Club Paradise in a theater.
Okay.
And was excited about it. And I assume Trevor saw it because he produced it.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, grunt teachers, like I thought of Club Paradise the way folks now think about the Avengers. Like, this movie's coming out. It's got Andrea Martin and Rick Moranis and Eugene Levy. Oh, Club Paradise. I can't wait. And I think I'm the only faculty member who's seen Armed and Dangerous. I bet Erica Ramis hasn't even seen Armed and Dangerous. It's a Eugene Levy, John Candy, buddy cop film written by Harold Ramis.
I feel like I've seen it on TV at some point in time in the past.
Well, I saw it in the theater, and I don't know how many people can claim that. So anyway, I was a...
Go look at Box Office Mojo right now, find that answer out.
And they'll just say Dale. Dale and Rob Murray, the dude I went with. What was the original? How did I get here?
How did I get here?
On this rambling tirade.
Yeah, no. You were talking about how you were everything led to this moment. You were cut from the right cloth to be here.
Yeah. So when I was 12, 13, and 14, that's when Saturday Night Live first started.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if modern folks realized like there was nothing like Saturday Night Live when that came in. It was like kaboom! It was an explosion. Like as a 13-year-old, mm-hmm. I'd never seen anything like it, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I'd always liked comedy. But the comedy at that time was like the Dick Van Dyke Show or Mel Brooks. So there was good stuff, but most of the stuff on TV was like the Flip Wilson Show or Sonny and Cher. You know, it was just kind of this innocuous comedy. But Saturday Night Live was like edgy and hard and late at night. And So
drug fueled.
It just into my 13-year-old brain. I mean, this is like it was an epiphany.
Yeah.
And in Chicago and maybe other places, after Saturday Night Live was over, then they would air SCTV, like the early 30-minute Harold Ramis written. And then on Sunday nights in Chicago was Monty Python.
Nice.
So like that. So that was like a Harold Ramis film school for a 13-year. Like every week, every weekend, SNL, Monty Python, SCTV.
I can't remember if it was when we lived in Minnesota or North Carolina, but they did kind of the same thing. SNL would air, and then it was Kids in the Hall.
Okay,
so that probably would be Minnesota, because like that makes sense. But
right.
But yeah, they would put them back to back, and so same deal. Yeah, you get that kind of education in how to do sketch.
How to just do everything. I mean, it just like completely rewired my brain, or completely just absorbed into my brain.
Yeah.
And then I went to, how many stories do you want to hear about how stupid I am?
I want to hear all the stories. The best part is this is going out, like alumni get to listen to this because they're all going to want to hear this stuff.
Yeah,
too.
They know how stupid I am. So, but they don't know the full range. So when I went to U of I, like John McNaughton did, I went as a biology major.
Okay.
I was going to be a veterinarian.
Oh.
And that's, and that's insane because I'm terrible at math and terrible at science.
Yes.
So I went there and was a biology major.
But you liked animals.
Hmm?
But you liked animals,
I liked I love animals.
Okay.
And that would have been very bad if I was a veterinarian because there'd be so many dead dogs and cats in the world. I lasted one semester. Right, I was on academic probation. It was a disaster. You know, I had a ton of classes. It was all calculus and chemistry. And there was a class that my stupid advisor told me. It's called animal science. And it's the easiest class in the world. It's like, this is a pig and this is a cow. But that's not what it was. It's, here's a cow. What do you feed it for maximum milk production? Like, I don't know. People know this. I don't care. So I was in bad shape right away. Knew it. Floundered. Was horrible. It was a bad fit. It was but it was also one of those good life lessons. Is the universe was saying, "You idiot, you are on the wrong path." It slapped me off that path.
I have a similar story. So I went to Virginia Tech and had a rough time from the get go because I tried to go in engineering, but I didn't get in as an engineer because I didn't have the pedigree coming in the GNE, because that's a big engineering school. And so I had to take like the stair step in engineering courses and that sort of thing. So one of the ones I decided to go ahead and take, I was an idiot and decided to take like 18 credit hours my freshman year.
I did, yeah.
And with the 8 a.m. class and everything. And so one of the classes I took was vector geometry at 8 a.m. with a teacher who sounded like Will Ferrell. And I could not get over that, because if you're half awake in a class and your eyes are closed and your teacher just sounds like Will Ferrell, you just immediately, your brain goes into like Anchorman and I just would think quotes and things like that and chuckle to myself and lose all of what they were talking about on the board. So yeah, that's like a cosmic like slap in the face to let you know, hey, you may be in the wrong spot.
Vector geometry.
Yes, it is basically
that literally kind of gives me trauma.
It tells you take everything that you know about math, like you know how the axis up so many steps and right so many steps and now replace all that with. What is it? Amplitude and...
this is hurting.
Yeah.
This hurts.
Amplitude, I think it was. It was so bad because it made me feel so stupid about math, which was always like a good thing for me leading into that. But yeah.
So, and I wasn't good at math. So imagine what I would think about. It was insane. So it was insane. And then here's how I'm stupid again. So I went to U of I for biology, but once I left biology, I should have left U of I.
Yeah.
Dumb. But I didn't. I went into cinema studies at U of I, and they just had a terrible film program. Mm. It was run one Romanian guy with a Bolex, and sometimes he'd go on vacation. You wouldn't have classes that year. So it was, you know, whatever. So I was at U of I. So then I had to go to Northwestern because I didn't get a proper film education at U of I. But if I had just gone to Northwestern immediately, that would have, you know, skipped a step there. But I'm an idiot. And then at Northwestern, in the grad school, see, one of the things about Ramis, one of the things that's why I'm so just enamored with the concept of Ramis is because to avenge my life, basically, because there was no place for comedy at Northwestern. And there's no place for comedy in academia in general. like, you know, I've been teaching over 20 years, and they've been trying to get rid of me the entire 20 years. But I'm just so, you know, such a, you know, little bulldog, I wouldn't leave. If I had any sense, I would have left years ago. And when I got to Northwestern, you know, all the students are making experimental films and, you know, films about their grandfather who survived the Holocaust and is like, I want to make a thing about sea monkeys that go crazy. And you're insane. So I was just this weird thing of me in the MFA program at Northwestern. And that, like, teachers could sort of appreciate that I was dedicated to it.
Yeah.
And the students liked it. So they saw that there was a process like an artistic process, but they couldn't make heads or tails out of it and figure out any value to it. And they couldn't help me with it.
Yeah.
Like, if something wasn't funny, they didn't know what to do with it.
Right. They didn't know how to fix it.
Right. Yeah. So, and it was funny because as a graduate student, you have this defense, you have this MFA defense, you put up all your work and then you have to defend it.
Right.
And my, and all, I heard all these horror stories about people's MFA defense. And mine was, I think, the easiest in the history of Northwestern because they'd run out of every horrible thing to say about me up until that point. So when it got to that point, it was like, Dale, he's still here. Fine. Bye.
It's almost the 8 mile approach to dealing with an MFA is that you just, everything's already been said terrible about you. So they've got nothing, no ammo left.
Yeah. I haven't seen 8 mile. I don't, but I assume, yeah,
that's,
but
that's
I'm often compared to Eminem. So
I ruined 8 mile for you. So that's,
well, now I'm intrigued to see it because who knew? 8 mile is my life. Who knew? And so then to finally answer this question for you,
quote of the episode right there
is how I actually got hired here is it was, so I taught at Columbia for, you know, years and years and years and years. And it was this break that we're coming up to. It was the winter break.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, there's a ton of stuff you have to do, but eventually you run out of that stuff during the break, and it's like, oh, time to get back to work. So it was one of these, you know, like January freezing days, and I was listening to podcasts for some reason.
Yeah.
It's like, I got the day, let's listen to podcasts. I was listening to Bob Odenkirk because I came up the stand-up ranks with Bob Odenkirk. My first paid gig was opening for Bob Odenkirk at Dirty Nelly's in Palatine. That was a, it wasn't even a comedy club, it was a folk music club, and they were doing comedies. And when I got hired, it was a show Friday, and two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. And then as it approached, it was like, we're not doing Friday shows anymore. And then as we approached farther, Saturday first show for sure, we'll see if people show up for the second show. So so the big bill of me and Bob Odenkirk did not draw big in Palatine in 1997. So anyway, I was listening to that because I just like to follow his career and I get a kick out of his career.
Yeah.
And like on the list of next episodes, like your show, came Jack C. Newell. I'm like, what? What the hell? Why is anyone interviewing Jack C. Newell? Because he was a student of mine at Columbia.
Yeah.
And after he was a student, we had taught together. And I don't know if he had stopped. I guess he had stopped teaching at Columbia at that point. Like, well, I guess I haven't seen Jack around. So, okay, what the hell's this thing with Jack?
Yeah.
They were he had just been hired to be the head of the digital program, not Ramus, but the digital program at Second City. I'm like, oh.
Which is what spurned Ramus was out of that. Yeah, yeah.
So then I sent off a little email. Hey, Jack. You need teachers? I work cheap. What do you think? Da-da-da-da. And he brought me in to teach this. There was a whole thing back then of, like, these video production classes. And there was, like, this advanced video production class. And you had to, like, apply to it. And it's almost like the Ramus application. Like, it's very sophisticated to get into this video class. And I did that. And when I came in to talk to him, he said, oh, well, keep this under your hat. It's not a for sure thing. But we might be making a film school. It might be called the Harold Ramis Film School and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I taught at the training center for a year. And then, what do you know, the school got up and going. And when, you know, I didn't, when he pitched all this, I'm just thinking because I don't think I've said enough controversial things at this point.
No, yeah, you got to dig in.
Well, I've disappointed your viewers. Something will come up.
There may be controversy over you being an idiot.
I don't think there's any controversy over that.
You sound fine so far.
And so I lost my train of thought right there.
You were talking about
oh, I didn't know if anyone would come here.
Yeah.
You know, I was literally like, maybe there will be students? I don't know. And then there were a bunch of students when we first started. So
yeah.
What do you know? And we've had a school, and had all these people come through, and it actually happened.
And there continue to be classes.
Yeah, what do you know?
Violet coming up soon.
Yep.
And us departing after, what, I got 2 weeks left?
Yep, all birds need to fly the nest. It's part of the process. But, you know, in truth, I wish I was still a film student at Northwestern. I wish I never left. I mean, I think that's why I went into teaching. Mm-hmm. It's because I would just, because all you do, you watch movies, you make movies, you talk about movies, you're with smart people, you're in Evanston. I could do that forever. I could be a student forever. But since I can't, I went into teaching.
Well, and you see reiterations of the same film 500 times. And
well, there's that, too. Oh, yeah, that part of the bad part about it.
Well, and you've gotten to see now, because you're teaching both us and both Cyan and Magenta for this term for making the short film, so our final film production class here. And so you've seen all these from the script phase and a few versions of that all the way up through the actual film and production end of it. And what's
well, I'm at about the point of, I don't want to see any more. I love y'all, but I've seen enough. We've spent enough time with this. Let's see it at the arc light. I really don't need to see another frame. I love Diego as the ghoul, but I've seen it a lot. Let's just see it on the screen and move on and make another project.
What are any of these interesting, exciting to you, the ones that the people are putting together?
Sure.
Yeah. Not going to go into specifics.
I'll tell you one. I'll do a specific. I really like Bridies. Yeah. I'm really what's happened here sometimes, and the most rewarding part of it is sometimes people have come in with like no film experience ever.
Yeah.
And their first projects in session one are a little shaky and it's a little off, and sometimes they're really afraid and da 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 da. And then by the end they get to this place where so like the stuff Bridie was talking about in session one, like her, you know, this is a weird term, hell's a poppin' style of just like throwing, it's just this wild kind of style, and it was kind of not fully formed in session one, and we were having issues with trying to glue it all together. And now you can see at the end of session three, there it is. There's that hell's a poppin' style, and it makes sense, and it's still crazy, and it's going here, and it's going there, but it's working, and
an underpinning for an actual story as opposed to just that kind of all over the place being
it's a
story.
Thing on screen that I watch and it makes sense, but it still has that, it still has all that brightiness to it. And you know, Jesse directed it, but that's part of the whole process too, is getting the team together and actually getting that thing on screen. And so with those kinds of things, I'm pleased about.
Mm-hmm.
There are things I'm not so pleased about.
Like what?
Well, I don't know. See, when you say that, with Ramis students, when you say something like that, everyone listening thinks, oh, he's talking about me. That's me.
I'm just trying to get to the controversial stuff that you were trying to do.
I don't know.
From
I don't. Maybe that's part of my. I don't know. Usually I say very controversial things, but I don't know. Didn't happen. Hasn't happened.
So far, it's been pretty easy.
It sure has. Oops.
So what? Where do you think that this is? Where this program's headed?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I don't. You know, I don't really think about the future ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in the moment. Like right now, all I'm thinking about is us.
Yeah.
This right here. But if you make me think about the I think that the place could be like the Yale drama school of comedy. Yeah. It would not surprise me if big time directors came out of here, like an Adam McKay kind of level director. And I wouldn't surprise me if folks are peppered onto TV writing staffs. And then beyond that, just people like Second City itself, just people do interesting things. So some people are Bill Murray, some people are this, and then other people are out and about doing interesting things.
The Dick Blasucci's of the world.
The Dick Blasucci's of the world.
Go behind the scenes and produce stuff from that end, yeah.
Yeah.
And so have you had anybody that's come through in past classes that that you felt like is the rising star?
Yeah. You know, the first class asked me this. You know, they're like, and I'm going to, if you ask me something, I'm going to tell you it.
That's why I'm asking you these questions, because I know you'll play like you're going to hold back, and then you'll answer the damn question.
You figured out the secret, Tony.
I've learned, after three terms of having Dale for classes, I've learned that Dale's bluntness knows
it's
no bounds.
Uncontrolled. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, see, once I start, then, you know, again, this Ramis kind of, he didn't. Why didn't he save me? What? I knew he didn't. He wasn't going
to
save me.
You're giving us far more credit for how many people are actually listening to this podcast.
Well, they'll listen to see if I say their name or not.
There have been people that have been on this podcast.
All right.
That
let's dig dirt. You want to know something about Jack Senol?
What's that?
No, I was kidding around. No, I mean, there are a lot of good students.
Yeah.
I'll just see if I start naming them. I know that they're gonna be sad. The ones that are left. He forgot me.
So you start with a blanket statement. I love all my students.
Well, I do not love all the students. Yeah. And now once I said that, he's talking about me. I knew it. I knew I was in the... But I could start naming names if you want.
It's up to you. You don't have to.
Well, lots of folks are good, you know. Sometimes the talent level here like just floors me. Like sometimes, you know, we were doing one of these end of the year, whatever it's called, the end of the session review things, and you know the purples came in, and I'm just looking at this stuff and I'm like, wow, you know, Matt Gold can really act, and Mitchell Stone is, you know, really funny, and Victoria can do opera. Yeah. You know, and Bailey has this weird thing that it's just all that, not only just kind of the cinematic stuff, and I could do that with every cohort. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, well, maybe not every cohort. Is he talking about my cohort?
You do claim that you remember every single film and every person that's come through Harold Ramis.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one who could name everyone by cohort color accurately.
Yeah.
And I think I could do it quickest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But eventually I won't be able to do that. When I first started teaching at Columbia, see, I got the same kind of cockiness at Columbia. Like at one point I remembered every student and their project, could name them. Yeah. And then now I can't name them from semester to semester.
Well, some of the names start bleeding into one another too, of some of the like people. There have now been two Brideys here, which is just beyond strange. But also
at this point,
there
are still Bridey Orange and Bridey Cyan.
But there will be a point where it's going to be like,
oh yeah,
it's going to be two films that are the same title or something like that.
Yeah, it'll happen
eventually.
The brain is not, it's not a well-oiled machine, and it's not getting any better either.
Yeah, I'd say it's doing all right. your classes have always been the most entertaining, just from a standpoint of, again, going back to the bluntness. I
thought you were
going to
say most intellectually stimulating, and then I'm going, oh boy, we have to close the place down if that's the case. Oh no,
I will not say that.
Okay, good. Thank God.
They've had their moments, but no. I think just from a standpoint of not feeling like I'm just being pandered to or pampered on some of these things that. It's not even just you, it's the environment of the class. It's very much like, well, I'm going to be blunt, and then I expect everybody else to do the same thing.
Yeah, that's the basis of my whole teaching philosophy and my whole philosophy towards life, is you just have to tell the truth. If you tell the truth all the time, you won't have problems. People will hate you sometimes, but you won't have problems. So
those are the people that don't want to hear the truth.
And which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
But if we screened something and it was atrocious, right? And I said, "Oh, look what we did. This is so. Look at this." And then if you're out there thinking, like, "What the hell's wrong with this guy?" Right. Then I can't. And also, it's not the process to get the best work. Like this process gets the best work. We have to look at it rigorously. We have to look at it, warts and all, and fix the things that need to be fixed and accentuate the things that are working well. And if we don't do that, if we go into denial and don't look at those things, we're going to create more mush. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to create mush.
Yeah.
And also in the real world, it's sink or swim, you know? So I have a problem right now with my screenwriting class at Columbia is they're just not delivering, and I don't know what they're thinking. You know, you're supposed to have a 90-page script at the end of this thing. You have 20 pages. You're going to die. You can't do that. You can't go out into the world and not deliver stuff. That's the basics of the thing. So even if every class was a party and we thought everything was wonderful, once you get out there, you're going to be in for a rude awakening. And also, that's the way I was brought up. Like at Northwestern, we would have, it's similar to the end of session reviews, but like way, way tougher.
Yeah.
Every faculty member would be there. It would just be you. You'd put up your thing, and then they would just
tear it apart.
It was jackals at you. And I would physically come out of there feeling beaten up. But I learned how to take a punch. I'll tell you a difference.
You learned how to deliver a punch, too.
And that, too. My punch, this is the thing I don't know that students realized. If you came in, if every class that we had, if you came in and I just was screamed in your face the whole time, that was it. Tony, and that's all I did the whole time. It's still easier than you'll find out there.
Yeah.
I can never replicate. So my punches are like sparring punches.
Yeah.
Some people might not feel that way all the time, but they really are. Where was I going? Oh, don't remember. Let's say something controversial.
I think it was the bluntness in your classes and where that comes from.
Also, I came up through stand-up, and that will teach you how to take a punch.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it benefits you. Mm-hmm. It's in your best interest as an artist. And, after starting to do stand-up, like when you have a great show, it's like you're on top of the world. It's euphoric. And then you have a bad show, and you're crushed. And then you keep doing it, and sometimes they're good shows, and you realize it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's part of the same process. It doesn't matter. So.
And there's things that are outside your control. Like, that really interests me about the for screening order, for how you put when we put these things up and play them at the Arclight, we've got two dramatic movies in our films. Well, I might even put mine in dramatic, maybe say three.
Yours is getting dramatic, yes.
It gets dramatic, but it's funny at times, I hope. Although you say it's not.
because you made me say it's not.
I figured I would just go ahead and get it out of the way. I would put it in the film, so I don't. So if you say it later, then I'm like, oh, he's just quoting the movie.
Yeah. I'll say that in the audience too after my line. Isn't that funny?
Well, we shall see. But
it does get dramatic. It does get.
It does get dramatic. But we've got some dramatic ones. And how do you program those? If you're doing a slapstick comedy and it comes right after a dramatic one, you're getting a different response than if you came after a feel good comedy or something like that was right before.
Yep.
So the same goes for stand up. If you've had three terrible open mic people go up before you, and you get up there, you have to win the audience back because they've all spent 15 minutes losing them.
Yeah. So like Dan of Magenta just showed me his movie, which is funny.
Yeah.
His movie.
I've heard the gist of it.
Porn Town. That's all you need to know.
Porn Town. Yeah.
And he's like, think the crowd's going to react. I'm like, don't know.
Yeah.
They should. I know that. I know they should. I know this is funny. I know an audience that's receptive to comedy should like this.
Right.
But who knows who's going to walk in the Arclight that day.
So I've done a bunch of those 48-hour and 72 film fests and stuff like that. And my favorite thing is going and seeing it in the theater with people, because once you get some practice doing it, you get to the point where you're like, laugh, awe, cry. Like you can kind of, it's almost like you're playing the orchestra. Like you know those points where they're going to deliver what you're expecting. And then you also pick up those other times that are like, oh, that got a laugh. That's interesting. Maybe I can somehow use that the next time around. So you get to this point where you're kind of messing with the audience and just playing them like an instrument.
Yep.
And
sometimes they play you like an instrument.
This is true.
And the instrument is a drum that they beat mercilessly to death.
But people in this class are going to have that experience for the first time.
Yeah, and again, this is a thing because just stuff comes with age. It just does. I know what it's like to be the hero on screening day, and I know what it's like to be the bum on screening day.
Yeah.
And it's way better to be the hero, and everybody's, loves you and says how great you are, and, they don't pay attention to you and, like, avoid you when you're... But it's, again, it's part of the same process. You can't be the hero if you're not sometimes the bum, and it doesn't matter. And if you're the bum this time around, it doesn't mean you won't be the hero the next time around and this kind of thing. It's just...
The lows also make the highs higher. Like if you feel what it's like to bomb, then you're gonna feel a lot better when you succeed.
Yeah, and I mean it's just it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. It is what, and you could have a great movie And it, you know, I mean, how many people are like, Citizen Kane? It's boring. Who did that? I don't want to watch that crap. It's a masterpiece, you idiot. Look, that's brilliant. That's genius. Dopey movie. I don't want to. So, is it Orson Welles' fault? Somebody, so, you know, yeah. Don't worry about the audience. You know, here's wisdom. Here's all the wisdom you need to get. You don't need to record me for 8 hours. Here is all of it. This is for sure. This is the best thing. And you can't
get your pad and pencil out. Write this down.
Do
here
this.
Here comes Dale. Dale's
here
wisdom.
It is. And you're gonna say, "Oh, well, that was dumb." But
if I haven't by now, why would I say?
Do not care what people think about you. And you can't. You have to psychologically get yourself to that point. But if you can get yourself to that, it frees you. You are now free. I mean, it absolutely makes no difference in the people are crazy. They think crazy stuff. So who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And you that's another thing that shows in the class is that you'll give somebody blunt feedback and you'll say, you don't have to listen to me. Like you can you can keep it the way if that's the way you want it and that's the way you need it to
be.
It's
your movie. Yep.
It's your call. Yep. Like which I appreciate too. It's not this end all be all. It's you know, I'll be blunt, I'll tell you what I think and you don't have to take it. If you get 10 other people that tell you otherwise and you want to keep it that way, then keep it that way, which I appreciate.
Yeah. There's the cliff. You're going to drive over it. I'm okay. Okay.
I'll be over here just
watching. I'll be over here. Enjoy the cliff ride. Yeah, because one, I could be wrong, and two, and it's part of the process. You're the artist. You have to make these decisions. I'm not going to be there every time saying, do this, don't do that.
And I think it's important. I think it's important to get feedback from people, but it's also important to ignore some feedback, especially if it's not repeated. You know, if you get one piece from one person and it's not somebody that's like somehow the end all be all, like it's perfectly fair to ignore it and just kind of ride it out.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'll be better for it.
You bet. But. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the process. You've taken all this stimulus and you, as the artist, figure out how to best apply this stimulus.
Yeah. This wasn't controversial. I think
what the hell? What can we say? Wait, you know who's really stupid? Those Bulgarians.
That's a line from Austin Powers. There's only two things I hate in this world. People that are people that are intolerant of other cultures and the Dutch.
There you go. I can't believe I didn't say. I can't believe, well, give it time. Do we have any more time? I'll say something controversial eventually.
Well, I was going to go ahead and wrap up, but if people are trying to find you and maybe spot a controversial statement from you in the future when it pops up, where can they find you on social media?
I don't even want to say. Here's a well.
What do you got?
You know, I had to take some of my movies offline, Tony.
Oh, really? Yeah. I've seen a couple of yours. Yeah. Did you have a YouTube?
Oh channel? No, there's a ton of stuff still up there.
Yeah.
Because I had a cable access show for 20 years.
Yeah. Which we looked into trying to do cable access for the news. To go through CAN TV.
Yeah.
You
should be able to.
We can, but it's
there's some commercial element to it.
No, it's when the things are deliverable and like they want to have the first run be for the public access versus, but since we're doing it for Second City and it shows up on their YouTube, we can't do that.
What? So
yeah, it's apparently a thing, and also the format is a little off for what they would for runtime and that sort of thing because it's like a 12-minute. They want stuff that's like solid.
Oh, fuck CAN TV. There's our controversy. Let's burn down CAN TV. I used to work at CAN TV.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They're idiots.
In their new office?
No, I've never been in the new office.
The new office is nice.
Well, there you go.
I haven't been in the studio space, but
built on the sweat of me. Great. I'm glad they're enjoying their new office. Twitter. I'm on Twitter.
Yeah.
Crudfish44.
Yep.
That's where you can find me.
Yep. And oftentimes promoting this podcast, which I very much appreciate.
You're welcome. We'll see if I promote this one. and then you just, you know, the videos are up there. They're, you know, my old cable access that were put up on YouTube when the, you know, quality wasn't so great.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's up there. You can find butt raping psychotic.
Wait,
what was that? I got your attention now, Tony.
Oh, the raving psychotic is that
butt rape.
There we go.
Please get it right. Yeah. That's what you could expect.
What was the show called?
We're Geniuses in France.
We're Geniuses in France. Yep. Okay. So we can look that up on YouTube and
yeah, or yeah, just Google Dale Chapman comedy and you'll get an avalanche of stuff like the butt raping psychotic. Here's the bit, and I think it's a good. See, this is the kind of thing I like. I would just put this on because I like it. The bit, there's like a long disclaimer before it, right?
Yeah.
Do not watch this. Get children away. Like a long, long, long. Like this is the most horrible thing you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
And then there's the theme song to the butt raping psychotic.
And there recorded this, by Bridie to go. You know,
that would be great if Bridie would do it. But there was like this song, an instrumental I found, and then I sang along with it. The butt raping, like whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then, so there's just a theme song. There's not the show. And then it goes to the butt raping psychotics. Sponsor is Little Debbie Snack Cakes, the favorite snack cake of the butt raping psychotic. See, that's what I find amusing.
It's juxtaposition. A good juxtaposition. Yes. There's nothing that can beat that.
Yeah. And that show never got picked up by a network for some reason. Womp, I don't know. Womp. Yeah. And now I teach you to make maybe I should put that mix that in with your movies.
The class needs a disclaimer at the top. Just run that disclaimer at the very top of your first class with the Violet should have that the first day of class.
Will indeed. Yeah. Violet Aaron for a rude awakening.
Well, I appreciate you coming on.
You're welcome, Tony. I appreciate you for being part of the whole school and process. And congratulations.
Thank you.
On the podcast, on graduating, on everything you've done here.
Once it happens.
Yes. Soon.
There's still time to kick me out. Soon. There's 2 weeks left.
Soon. Maybe.
Thanks, Dale.
Behave.